The end of the Second World War did not bring the world into a simple age of peace. In the spring and summer of 1945, as the guns fell silent across Europe and the Pacific, humanity stood before a landscape of victory, exhaustion, ruin, and fear. Cities from Warsaw to Berlin lay shattered. Millions of people wandered across borders as refugees, survivors, prisoners, or displaced families searching for homes that no longer existed. The old balance of power that had shaped the early 20th century had collapsed under the weight of total war. Nazi Germany had been defeated, Imperial Japan had surrendered, and the European empires that once claimed global authority were weakened beyond recognition. Yet beneath the relief of victory, a new rivalry was already taking shape. The wartime alliance between the United States and the Soviet Union had been born out of necessity, not trust. Once their common enemy disappeared, the differences between them became impossible to ignore. The struggle that emerged from those differences would not begin with a single declaration of war, nor would it be fought mainly by armies crossing borders in the old style. It would become the Cold War, a conflict of ideology, diplomacy, economics, intelligence, propaganda, military alliances, and global influence. The origins of the Cold War lay partly in the deep ideological divide between the two great powers that survived the war strongest. The United States presented itself as a defender of constitutional government, private enterprise, political pluralism, and individual liberty. Its leaders believed that open markets and representative institutions were not merely American preferences but essential foundations for a stable world. By contrast, the Soviet Union, led by Joseph Stalin, was a one-party communist state built around centralized authority, state ownership, and suspicion of capitalist powers. Soviet leaders believed that capitalism produced exploitation, imperialism, and eventually war. They also believed, with some historical justification, that hostile nations had repeatedly invaded Russia from the West. These differences did not automatically make conflict inevitable, but they created a climate in which every action could be interpreted as a threat. To Americans, Soviet control over Eastern Europe looked like aggressive expansion. To Soviets, American calls for free elections and open trade looked like an attempt to surround and weaken them. Each side believed it was acting defensively. Each side saw the other as dangerous. The uneasy partnership between the United States, Great Britain, and the Soviet Union had already shown signs of strain during the war itself. Franklin D. Roosevelt, Winston Churchill, and Joseph Stalin cooperated because they needed one another to defeat Adolf Hitler, but their military priorities and political goals often clashed. Stalin complained bitterly that the Western Allies had delayed opening a second front in France, leaving the Soviet Union to bear the heaviest burden of ground combat against Germany. The Soviet people paid an almost unimaginable price. Millions of soldiers and civilians died, villages were burned, industries were destroyed, and entire regions were consumed by occupation and battle. This suffering shaped Soviet expectations after the war. Stalin wanted security, and in his mind security meant friendly, or obedient, governments along the Soviet border. The United States, protected by oceans and enriched by wartime production, viewed security differently. American leaders wanted a world in which trade could flow, nations could rebuild, and no hostile power could dominate Europe or Asia. These goals sounded reasonable in Washington, but in Moscow they could appear like a demand that the Soviet Union accept vulnerability after staggering sacrifice. The wartime conferences at Tehran, Yalta, and Potsdam revealed both cooperation and mistrust. At Yalta in February 1945, Roosevelt, Churchill, and Stalin discussed the future of Europe while the war still raged. They agreed that Germany would be occupied and disarmed, that the United Nations would be created, and that liberated countries should have governments reflecting the will of their people. Yet the language of agreement concealed different interpretations.